Welcome back to the program as we turn our attention to science and more specifically the realm of physics. We're going to take a look at the Large Hadron Collider, the largest machine ever built by man. It has a spectacular mission to recreate the conditions that existed immediately following the Big Bang. We're going to spend some time this morning talking with a guest that has been with us before. He is one of the top science writers in the country. He is Amir Axel. Even though he simplifies things, I think that the next 30 minutes are going to be a wild ride. But just go with it and try indeed to understand what this amazing machine is trying to accomplish. Amir Axel is the author of 14 nonfiction books, including the bestseller Fermat's Last Theorem. He's appeared on more than 30 television programs. His work has been published in numerous publications. He's a Guggenheim Fellow. It is my pleasure to have him here to talk about his latest work, Present at the Creation, the story of CERN and the Large Hadron Collider. Amir Axel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Great to have you here. First of all, tell our listeners who may not know what the Hadron Collider is all about.
It's the biggest machine ever made. It's in circumference, it's 16 and a half miles in long. It's underground, 300 feet underground in the tunnel outside in the region that's between France and Switzerland. It's on the border. Part of it is in Switzerland and part of it is in France. And that's on purpose because France and Switzerland were the two nations that were most active at CERN, which is a European concern for the study of the atom. Its detectors, which are the scientific instruments that detect the particles that result from collisions underground, are the largest scientific instruments ever made. One of them is seven stories high, and the other one is five stories high, but much heavier. So one's the heaviest, the other one's the largest.
And of course, one of the things, I mean, you talk about this as the largest, most complex machine ever built. It's hard to imagine, to really grasp the size of this, this underground tunnel that's some 16 and a half miles long.
Right. When you go in there, and I've been very fortunate to be invited there, I still don't understand why I deserve that privilege. I went underground just before they closed, and they let me go into the machine itself, into the detector, which other visitors were not allowed. Others were given red helmets so they know where they are, and they gave me a white helmet as if I worked there. And I have pictures of me actually inside the place where the protons are crashing right now as we speak. When I stood there, I remembered what a friend of mine, a well-known physicist at MIT, told me. He said, when you go there, you'll feel as if you're seeing the new kind of cathedrals. It's like looking at a large, beautiful cathedral in front of you, and it's all underground, and it's all made of electronics. It's just a human creation that really blows you away.
And, of course, even your title, Present at the Creation, comes from a line of the writer George Shostakovich after the first nuclear explosion.
Right. The CERN itself, interestingly enough, was created as a counter to the atomic bomb project, to the Manhattan Project in the U.S. It was launched in 1954 in an effort to study the atom, but for peaceful purposes. So this is like the new beginning in the post-war era of trying to understand what it is that we are made of, so what we were created from. And it tries to go back to, this is something like a trillionth of a second after the Big Bang, if people can believe that. Scientists think that the particles that will appear there are the ones that existed only that small fraction of a second after the Big Bang created the universe, or started creating it.
Right. And talk about what the physics of this is all about. What scientists think they can create if they can create the correct conditions?
Well, there are several aims of the machine. There's something called the standard model of particle physics, which contains the electrons, which are everywhere, of course, in our universe, the quarks that exist inside the protons and neutrons that make up the nucleus of all matter, and there are higher generations of particles. Those are similar to the electron and the quarks, but they exist for a shorter period of time, and they disintegrate very quickly. So there are three such generations. Now, there's also the particles that carry force. For example, the photon that's so common, you know, that's how we see light. Light is photons. Is a particle that carries force. That's the electromagnetic force. And there are others that do the same, such as the gluons that hold the quarks together. Now, there's one missing piece of the standard model of physics, of particle physics, and that's called the Higgs boson. And that's predicted very strongly by the theory to exist. Now, the Higgs boson has been called the God particle because that's the particle believed to have imparted mass to all the other particles as the universe was created. And that's within about a trillionth of a second after the Big Bang. So there was something that physicists call a broken symmetry. So if you can think of the Big Bang as this tremendous explosion of just sheer energy, and then suddenly the energy goes in all directions, it's all uniform, and suddenly a symmetry in physics, which exists in the mathematical space, some kind of symmetry breaks down, and you have this Higgs taking over and giving mass to all the particles, the electron, the quarks, and so on. So that's what physicists are looking mainly for. This is the purpose for which this $10 billion project was launched, is to look for the Higgs boson. Now, some physicists believe that what CERN, what the LHC will discover is not only the Higgs or not the Higgs, depending on whether they believe in the Higgs, but something called dark matter. So this is another theory. A physicist at Caltech by the name of Fritz Zwicky in the 30s discovered that the universe contains a lot of dark matter. Now, dark matter is something that he saw as being inside galaxies, holding them together, in addition to all the matter that can be seen as stars or visible matter. And there's a lot more of that, several times more than the amount of matter in the universe. And physicists, many of them, believe that dark matter will be discovered, its nature will be discovered at CERN, and that's perhaps through a theory called supersymmetry, which extends the symmetry or the structure of the standard model to include more particles. These additional particles are believed by many to be the dark matter. And then there are other aims, such as looking for really fantastic things like hidden dimensions of space, dimensions of space in addition to the three of space and one of time that we're aware of from everyday life. So it's really a fantastic kind of almost science fiction project.
And of course, if those dimensions are found, or if there are things that lead to a better understanding of that, perhaps we'll better understand things like string theory.
Exactly. String theory is what tells us that there maybe additional dimensions, because when physicists pursue string theory, they have to use more than four dimensions. In fact, they use 10 or 11 dimensions, and therefore string theory strongly believe that these dimensions exist. Now, if these dimensions exist, the way that CERN looks for them, you can see how they're looking for particles because they have these huge detectors, and the particle hits something, some electronic piece in the detector, and that indicates a particle, and you can see its track inside the machine. The way they think they will find hidden dimensions is missing energy. There's energy that will leak somewhere that you can't see where it's going. You don't see it, just disappeared. And then they think that would be a very strong indication that it went into another dimension of space-time, which is really amazing to me.
What is the connection, if any, between the search for the Higgs boson and this idea that dark matter can be recreated? Because both seem to have specifically to do with the creation of mass.
Right. Well, the connection is through supersymmetry. That's the best theory that we have. Now, supersymmetry may have the Higgs in it, or it may have more than one Higgs. So it's if you can think of the standard model as a list, and that's what it is, a list of particles arranged in columns and rows, then the supersymmetry would have another page across the other, on the other side of the book, so to speak. On one side you have the standard model, on the other side you have supersymmetric particles that haven't been found yet, and the Higgs may be on both sides of the page or only on one side. Scientists don't know for sure. So the mass that was created either by a Higgs or maybe by, if the Higgs doesn't exist, and there are some physicists who suspect that maybe it doesn't. If it doesn't exist, there's another possible mechanism that gives mass. At any rate, whatever gave mass to all the particles that we know also gave mass to the supersymmetric partners. They're called supersymmetric partners because they're on the other side of the page. There's a partner for each particle on the left hand. There's a particle on the right hand that does other things. So they must have been created by the same kind of process through a God particle or through something else.
Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit about how the LHC works. I mean, this is a machine that is cooled to, in fact, the coldest place in the universe.
Right. It contains 9,600 superconducting magnets. They're giant magnets, and they require a temperature that's lower than the temperature of outer space. So I might say, how could you have a temperature lower than outer space? And the answer is you put energy into it by creating this liquid helium. Helium wants to be a gas, but when you compress it, it becomes liquid helium. You put a lot of energy to compress it, and that's at the temperature lower than the temperature of outer space. And those magnets require that temperature all the time. So there's constant creation of liquid helium that circulates inside those 9,600 magnets underground. So it's just a fantastic place. It's colder than outer space. And the protons are accelerated in it to a speed that's 99.999999% of the speed of light. So it happens in stages. Those magnets bend the track of the protons inside. The protons are obtained from just a hydrogen gas in a bottle. It's a simple a bottle of hydrogen gas. They're ionized. They become, therefore, protons, and they start being accelerated in smaller accelerators. Each one of these was the top of the line years ago, and then it was superseded by higher and higher power accelerators. And the last one, called the SPS, the Super Proton Synchrotron, which made very important discoveries in the 80s, feeds the LHC directly, the Large Hadron Collider. Now, when they started, they go at a certain speed, which is already close to the speed of light, but then they're accelerated faster and faster and faster. And when they reach top energy, they have this the speed that I said. It's very close to the speed of light. Now, if you can imagine one of these protons racing a light ray, so they're so close to the speed of light that if a light ray races one of these protons to the nearest star, it will arrive there only a third of a second after the light ray. And the nearest star is 4.2 light years away from us. So you can imagine how fast those protons are going. They're virtually at the speed of light. Because of relativity, you can't reach the speed of light for any particle that has any mass at all. But you can get it closer and closer. So, of course, every accelerator, so you can get 99.999991, and you can get higher and higher than that. You can get very, very, very close to the speed of light, but you can never, according to relativity, you can never reach the speed of light itself because you're massive. So because you have, you know, you're inertial. You have mass that prevents you from being accelerated to the speed of light. But you can get very close to it. And, of course, the closer you get, the higher the energy that you have. Now, it doesn't happen with the light ray. Light ray goes, a photon goes at the speed of light and has a certain energy, and that's it. But a massive particle, the closer it gets to the speed of light, the higher the energy it has. And therefore, that's what they want. They really want, it's not so much the speed that they care about the energy. And with the speed, you get this energy. And when they crash, they release all this energy. And again, using special relativity, E equals mc squared, when the mass is destroyed in the collision with the other particle coming from the other direction at that immense speed, the energy of the mass is released. And that creates, by using the same formula, E equals mc squared, you create new mass, new particles, and that's the principle of all accelerators and for all colliders and especially for the LHC. So they're trying to create very massive particles that the Higgs is supposed to be very massive, that existed for a fraction of a second after the Big Bang. And to do that, you need the speed.
Talk a little bit about the 10,000 people that are part of this whole operation.
Yes, this is really amazing. That's one of the amazing things about CERN. There are 10,000 scientists from around the world. They're all working, living at CERN and working there, and they live in harmony. Nobody understands how, because, in fact, I talk to a lot of people there, and they say, well, in other places, people compete and step on each other, and there's backbiting and everything, and not here. And you kind of raise an eyebrow, really, and I said, really, yeah, that's... it's just the magic of CERN. I don't think anybody knows how. So not only the particles are weird there, but the people are different from everywhere else. It's a corporate culture that began with cooperation in 1954 when CERN was founded. It was a few years after the war, and people who came there decided to cooperate. So even though one of the physicists there told me, if we have huge egos here, you know, people get Nobel Prizes and very famous, important physicists, and yet the structure is such that they always cooperate. They compete in a subtle way. I mean, you know, one team may get a Nobel Prize and a competing team won't, but they still share information. They go and have coffee together and they socialize. Maybe because they live in a somewhat isolated place. It's near Geneva, but they tend to live in places in France where it's cheaper across the border. And they socialize among themselves. They live in the lab pretty much all the time, and they socialize with other people in the lab, and they tend to like each other, and it's a very unusual place.
Is there anything that scientists desire that is beyond the state of the art of LHC in terms of a collider?
Right. There are several things. For example, to prove string theory directly without just finding additional dimensions of space would require energies that are immense, that you cannot create at the LHC. And that's one of the biggest problems in physics today. And that's why what keeps people thinking about the next accelerator, which will be even bigger, although it's not even on the drawing board. They're considering a straight line, a linear accelerator, such as one that's not far from where you are. It's at Stanford. There's a Stanford linear accelerator. That's what was one of the early ones, and many important discoveries were made there. So they're again looking. There are two ways. You can either make a straight line accelerator that doesn't require as many magnets, because the protons or whatever particles are used go in a straight line, which is how they want to go. Particles don't like to bend. Here they're forced to bend constantly by these magnets. So it's cheaper to make, because you don't need all that liquid helium. You only need a little of it to focus the beam. But on the other hand, with the linear accelerator, when you get to the end, that's it. There's nowhere else to go. While with the circular one, such as the LHC, the protons can be accelerated again and again and again. They get a kick of energy every time they pass around the circle. So string theory is something that that cannot be proven directly by the LHC. And more than that, wedding general relativity, the theory of gravity, the modern theory of gravity that we have, with quantum mechanics is impossible, perhaps, with the LHC. Nobody knows, but you need higher energies. Either through string theory or through another theory, you need a lot more energy because, for example, the graviton is a particle that they don't even expect to appear in the LHC. That's the particle that carries the force of gravity in the same way that the gluon carries the strong force that holds the quarks together inside protons and neutrons. And the photon, the typical light beam or light particle, carries the electromagnetic force. So the graviton, which is very, very important if we are to extend the standard model of physics to include gravity. I mean, imagine a model for particles and everything in it except for gravity. I mean, we all feel gravity. So that final model, the so-called holy grail of physics, is beyond the LHC, and everybody knows that. But we need higher and higher and higher energies all the time, but the energy needed for proving string theory or wedding quantum or quantum gravity is what it's called, quantum theory with gravity, probably requires a lot more energy than the LHC itself.
Of course, there's also a lot of science fiction that surrounds the LHC and this search for dark matter that we talked about before, and a lot of legitimate fear that people have about what might happen if those conditions of the Big Bang are in fact recreated.
Right. In fact, that was the first thing that I researched when I started researching this book 2 years ago, was the fear of black holes. And I have to tell you, every physicist I met, I asked, that was probably my first question, usually my first question. So what about black holes? Will the LHC create black holes? Now, I have to confess that nobody told me that the probability is zero. They all said the probability of a black hole is very, very small. So nobody would say that it was zero. On the other hand, everybody, virtually everybody I talked to, and I talked to maybe 50 physicists or more, Everybody told me if a black hole would be created by the LHC, it would be extremely small, and it will evaporate before it even reached the detector wall. It would evaporate very quickly. Now, the reason they believe it would evaporate has to do with the theory of Stephen Hawking called Hawking radiation. So a real black hole, so to speak, a large black hole that exists in space. For example, you can see one nearby in the constellation of Cygnus, which is part of the summer triangle. It's already going away from us as we go into fall, but we're in fall now, but you know, you can perhaps still see it. There are black holes in space, and they are large bodies. They were larger than the sun when they exploded at the end of their lives as stars. And they evaporate very, very slowly. Stephen Hawking showed that a massive black hole evaporates in something like 10 to the 70th years, which is 1 and 70 zeros after it years. So it's forever, so to speak. But they do evaporate because of quantum mechanics, some quantum phenomena at the surface of the black hole. Now, for a tiny black hole, though, if it could be created in the LHC, it would be so small as compared to a star that it would evaporate in a fraction of a second. At least that's the theory. Now, I took my daughter to CERN. I have only one child, and I stood there right over the detector in a place at the control room of ATLAS, one of the two main detectors. So the protons were crashing virtually under our feet, 300 feet underground, right below us where we were. And the fact that I took her there, I think, shows everybody my confidence that it won't create a black hole that that will swallow the Earth.
What is the time frame on LHC at this point in terms of when they hope to accomplish some of the things that they have set out to try and find?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because in 2008 they were all ready and they're all excited about starting, you know, full power. And they started in September 2008, and as a lot of people know, it crashed. And what happened was the machine is so powerful, it's more powerful than people imagined, in a sense, that when they made these welding points for the current, going into the magnets, those welding points weren't strong enough to carry the very strong current that was needed to create that that energy. And so what happened was it melted, and the heat went, you know, the superconducting magnet, the term is quenched, meaning stopped being superconducting. The temperature rose very quickly, and fire erupted inside the tunnel. And what happened is 54 magnets, so they're extremely expensive, crashed and burned, and, well, some parts of them burned. And the irony was they had LHC Fest called for the next week, where heads of state were invited to CERN for the big start, and they had to cancel everything. They were immensely embarrassed. I mean, you talk to people at CERN, they're still traumatized by that event. So now they don't really know what to do. It's like a new car you bought, and nobody knew about its performance. You revved it really high, and you burnt the engine, so you don't want to do it again, and so now you drive it at low speed. That's what they're doing. They're driving it at low speed. It's running at half the energy, which is still pretty good. It's 3.5 times more than any previous accelerator. The one at Fermilab is 3.5 times. That's the biggest on this side of the Atlantic. That's 3.5 times less powerful than the LHC. At present energy, the LHC can go to 7 times more than Fermilab, the Tevatron at Fermilab. So it can go to 14 trillion electron volts. Right now it's running at only 7 trillion electron volts. The reason it's working at that energy is because they're worried about crashing it again. So about the plants, they are not sure. They keep changing their minds every once in a while. They have their directors meet in a room, and they discuss, and then they issue this decision. The decision right now is to run it for a few more months, and then wait for a year for maintenance, and then restart it and build up slowly to full energy somewhere in 2013, I think, or 2012. They keep changing their minds on these because they want to move forward very quickly. On the other hand, they're worried about, they say they can't afford another breakdown of the machine.
Mm-hmm. And finally, what does LHC bode for the future of physics, do you think?
Wow. Well, a lot of physicists think this is the future of physics. This is the culmination point of all of physics. Everybody is so excited about it. Virtually every physicist you talk to either says, oh, I'd like to go to CERN, or I just came back from there. And this is like the mecca of all physics. All physicists either go there or hope to go there or plan to go there. And this is where everything comes together. It's the convergence points of science, of physical science right now, in cosmology and parts of mathematics, too, that have to do with these symmetries. So a lot of physical science converges there. This is our biggest tool, and there's nothing in history, in the history of science, that has generated so much, you know, excitement by so many people. It's just amazing. Now, will it be the future of physics? It will be the future of physics for the next 20 years, because they think that the next accelerator will not go online for at least 20 years from now. So this is it for the next two decades, and this is where hopefully great things will happen.
Amir Axel, the book is Present at the Creation, the story of CERN and the Large Hadron Collider. It's just out from Crown. Amir, I thank you so much, as always, for being with us.
Thank you, Edward. It's really a pleasure.